TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Gore Vidal in conversation with Lewis Lapham. Understanding America's Terrorist Crisis. One of America's most famous novelists, playwrights, and essayists had problems publishing his most recent book, entitled Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace, How We Got to Be So Hated. The Federation of American Scientists had cataloged nearly 200 military incursions since 1945, in which the United States has been the aggressor. Gore Vidal included this list in his text, and Vanity Fair refused to print it. The Nation held off publishing the book until the early summer of 2002, and after it had gone to the bestseller lists in Italy and across Europe. Gore Vidal spoke at a belated book party in San Francisco on terrorism, Timothy McVeigh, the Patriot Act, and the Bush administration. Could it be, Gore Vidal says, that the greatest victim of the September 11 terror attack will be American liberty? The book party for Gore Vidal was held at the historic Herbst Theater in San Francisco. An overflow crowd had come to hear someone who's deeply tied into the elite families of this country come up with the most irreverent and blunt criticism of the oil boys in the current administration. Born at West Point 76 years ago, Gore Vidal was raised in the Washington, D.C. home of his grandfather, Oklahoma Senator Thomas Gore. He's a cousin of Al Gore and brother-in-law of John F. Kennedy. You will hear Gore Vidal in conversation with Lewis Lapham, editor of Harper's Magazine. The Independent Institute sponsored the event. Here is Lewis Lapham opening the conversation.
Gore, I count it both a honor and a pleasure to talk to you on these subjects. And I gather from reading Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace that you would think that we are more threatened at this point by, not by the terrorists, who may or may not be where we think they are, but by the mullahs in Washington. Is that a fair...
I think that they are a clear and present danger. And we must be on guard against the Enron Pentagon junta that governs us so idly. You were talking earlier about who was the most surprised by 9/11. I had figured out some time ago, and one of the reasons that I have this little list in the book of unilateral strikes that we have made against second and third world countries, over 200 of them since 1949, 50. And sooner or later, somebody was going to get irritable. I mean, it's bound to happen. The first law of physics is there is no action without reaction. Our rulers seem to be blithely unaware of this. They can do anything they like, and people can go lump it. I was betting not so much on a Muslim strike as a Panamanian one. The fury of Panama when we seized their ruler, Noriega, which automatically ended all drugs in America. Have you noticed that since then? George Bush Sr. did that for us because he cares. And we got another one. Anyway, in answer to your question, yes or no, as the case may be.
Yes or no. But the... In whose, we have a war on terrorism, which is a war both on an unknown enemy and an abstract noun. Therefore, it's a war with no end, and it's a war that cannot be won. And it bears a resemblance to the war on drugs for the same reason. And the question then is, in whose interests are these wars?
Well, corporate America is the usual explanation, and I dare say that it is good for business. We were entering a bit of a depression at the time of 9/11. So if it was Osama's timing, it was very clever to hit us when we were really quite off balance. But these presidents, as they go, get worse and worse, proving that Darwin was wrong. I'm a born-again creationist with the last 10 presidents. As the presidents get sillier and more reckless, the wars get more surreal. We are fighting, we blow up Afghanistan when all of our enemies who struck at us in the airplanes that day were Saudi Arabians. They aren't Afghans. And the Afghans were rather hurt that we were blowing up all their cities when we should have been taking out Riyadh and the Saudi royal family and perhaps the rest of the family of Osama. So we hit the wrong people. Now, the sinister side is the speed with which Clinton, after Oklahoma City, which I deal with in the little book, was ready with an anti-terrorist act. Speed of light with the most venomous dialogue, condemning the terrorism of McVeigh and of the so-called patriot movement across the country. Then, of course, they decided immediately various of our freedoms were diminished, Fourth Amendment specifically. And I was startled how fast he was with it. Now we have the USA Patriot Act, which was passed, I think it was the 20th of October, after the infamous September 11th. Congress passed it and, as is their wont, didn't read it. I don't know what feeling they have against it. Maybe they don't take it seriously. But that was a terrific piece of legislation, reminiscent of one of my favorite emperors, Tiberius. He was actually rather a good scout and certainly very bright. And Tiberius, when he became emperor, the Senate, in a cringing moment, sent him some legislation saying that they would accept in advance, sight unseen, any legislation that he wanted to send up to the Senate of Rome. And he sent back a message, and he said, you've lost your senses. Suppose the emperor has gone mad. Suppose the emperor is a raging enemy of Rome, and you didn't know it. You can't do that in advance. And they sent it back to him again. Anything, glorious Caesar, that you send us, we will endorse. And he said, and I feel myself wanting to repeat Tiberius's words, how eager they are to be slaves.
Is there a real change, let's say, since the Second World War, since 1945, 1947, when we begin to build the national security state?
Well, that was the great change, and it was an act, it was enacted by Congress, the National Security Act. It was 48 or 49. By 1950, Harry Truman gave us a militarized economy. And we were, it was Charles E. Wilson, who was an important honcho then, who said, why is it we're always taken surprise by Pearl Harbors and so on? Why don't we just stay armed all the time? So we don't have to rearm ever. We're just constantly armed. Every now and then a genius idea does bubble up from General Electric. And that was the genius idea. We have been at war, really, ever since 1950. And the list that I have kept my piece from being published in Vanity Fair, and even the nation wouldn't take it. They couldn't face this list of places that we had struck at, like gallant little Panama, which is close to my heart, as you can see, and I worry about Panama. We have been like a rogue elephant going around the world, attacking this country and that country. And it was used to be because they were going to go communist. Many of them hadn't even thought of it. But we would always find a communist somewhere, and we would send in the troops. So we have this perpetual war for perpetual peace. This is not a war. Because Junior says it's a war does not make it one. Because nobody has told him a war is between two countries. A country has an army, a navy, an air force, and a capital city, too. And they make stamps. I mean, you how I'd like to advise him for a week, you know. So these people are, for the most part, rip-off artists. Notice that they're all gas and oil men. From Cheney to the two Bushes, I think Rumsfeld also. And what this is really about is oil. And it's Central Asian oil, which is what we've got our eye on. We do have practical motives every now and then. It is not just for sheer glory that we get into a war like the Afghanistan. Afghanistan is the entranceway to Central Asia and five republics that used to belong to the Soviet Union that are now the largest suppliers of gas and natural gas and oil. He who gets his hands on that will really control the world for a while. Henry Adams, who was something of a geopolitician, and his brother Brooks Adams, had worked out that he who controls Shanxi province in China, northern China, would control the earth because it had the most metal, most iron ore, and coal, which they used in those days. And so our whole business in the Philippines, in which Teddy Roosevelt went along with the Adams brothers, was to get our foothold on the mainland of Asia. So we get the Philippines from the Spanish. We don't let them set up their own country, which they wanted to do. And we become a great Asiatic power, and we end up being emperor of Japan, which was good going, but we never got Shanxi province. Now we have a second big chance, which is forgetting about Persian oil, which is getting too dicey, and going to Caspian oil. And that is the background to it, and I've got a very nice story here from a surprising source, a quotation from a newspaper. I will appear to be currying favor, as the paper is your own chronicle. I say, yet the simple reasons behind the various provocations that led to the attack of 9/11 was precisely stated 2 weeks after the attack by your own San Francisco Chronicle, where Frank Viviano wrote, quote, "The hidden stakes in the war against terrorism can be summed up in a single word, oil. The map of terrorist sanctuaries and targets in the Middle East and Central Asia is also, to an extraordinary degree, a map of the world's principal energy sources in the 21st century," end quote. That is what it is all about. So you see, you need never stray from the Bay Area if you want to know more than the editors of Time and the Washington Post. It also helps that a major player in the secret war for Caspian oil just happens to hang out in this area, UNOCAL.
That kind of geopolitical realpolitik is not what is presented to the American public. I mean, we're doing God's work, presumably. I mean, it goes back to Woodrow Wilson, who it's never clear whether he thinks that America is a religion or a state. And
religion, I think, was his.
Yeah. So, I mean, he invades Mexico to teach the Latin Americans to elect good men. Teddy Roosevelt takes Panama because it's a mission of collective civilization, and so forth and so on. What is that about, Gore? I mean, we have the same thing with Bush. I mean, Bush, it's Holy Crusade.
Well, that is an inheritance of our original Anglo-Saxon forebears. And the British Isles, I think probably over the centuries, have produced more interesting, even amusing hypocrisy than any other nation on earth. And we are the heirs of the tradition. We can't stop lying about motivations. And it's just as second nature to us to steal money and say it's for your own good. You just spend it stupidly.
But do you think the, again, you get this, our friends in Washington would tell us that the imperial mission has the full faith and backing of the American public, and I don't think that's true.
Of course it doesn't. My God, every generation of Americans, including mine, had to be dragged into wars.
Yeah.
Second World War, 80% of the American people did not want to go back to Europe to fight, having been sold a lemon in 1917. Hence FDR's series of provocations, and this is not, I am a New Dealer, so this is not right-wing guff. Roosevelt provoked the Japanese into attacking us. The whole story is very clear now. It's all come to light. And he did it. Now, people say, oh, awful, he couldn't have done that. You must hate him to say that. I said, no, I admire him. If that was the only way to defeat Hitler, well, provoke them so that they will strike us at Pearl Harbor. He'd been reelected in 1940. No sons of yours will ever serve in foreign wars in any administration of mine. He stuck with that. He would like to attack the Germans. He'd like to attack the Japanese, but he doesn't dare. So he provokes them into attacking us. This is Machiavelli on such a grand scale. I feel mean repeating something about a noble American president who ought to be on Mount Rushmore. And he ought to. But sometimes there are provocations that are necessary in a historic process. Hitler, we all agreed, was pretty bad. This doesn't often happen that you have somebody who's that bad. So Roosevelt was on strong moral ground, although very weak constitutional grounds. But we've had less worthy wars since.
But I have read the reports in Washington, and they airily say that the American people would gladly accept 30,000 casualties during the invasion of Iraq. I don't believe that.
As long as it's somebody else being killed, they don't mind that as much as if they might be put at risk. But when we gave up the draft after Vietnam, and it's a mercenary army, basically. And one of the conditions is no member of Air Force, Army, Navy is to be hurt. And this is difficult to do, but one result is the planes fly at 35,000 feet.
Yeah.
Where you can't see anything. That's why, you know, orphanages and schools are the targets of choice. Whereas military supply centers might not be so easy to get at. No, it's a weird world. A mercenary army that is not to be hurt, blowing up innocent countries, relatively innocent, like Afghanistan. What we did, I liked your remark about having turned over our military to show business.
In Afghanistan, ABC News is denied entrance, is not invited to the battleground or even close to it. On the other hand, ABC, which is owned by Disney, has made a deal with Jerry Bruckheimer, who is the producer of Gladiator and Black Hawk Down and Top Gun. And Bruckheimer, in conjunction with the Pentagon, will make a 14-part series, documentary series, on the war in Afghanistan. And that is what will be presented on ABC as news. So it's a fairy tale. I mean, it's the equivalent of the Fellowship of the Ring. And as I say, we've been able to do this for 20 years with very few of our own people getting killed, at the same time producing enormous sums of money for the defense contractors and the various law enforcement agencies. I mean, in your book, you talk about McVeigh, and I think in a very interesting way. It's the most interesting commentary on McVeigh I've seen. And you make the point that McVeigh declared war on a government that he felt had declared war on its own people. And I gather you share some of that sentiment. I mean, I don't
I know
endorse
why
McVeigh's
did, yeah.
action, but I mean, I'm saying that. But do you think that the American government has declared war on the American people?
Well, the Branch Davidians at Waco had the impression that when they were being destroyed by Bradley tanks and.
But it's also the constant, which you talk about here again, and the constant subversion of the civil liberties, the shredding of the Fourth Amendment, the seizing of private property. The Patriot Act allows the government to tap anybody's phone, open anybody's mail.
Well, I also have a long list of freedoms lost, written about 5 or 6 years ago in Vanity Fair, and how in big agriculture has deliberately driven small farmers out of business so that they can have these vast conglomerates. And the ex-farmers turned into Timothy McVeighs. Some of them are crazier than others, and some of them are sadder than others. And an awful lot of them end up the way, as he did, as a sharpshooter in the army. That's the only thing open to them, because they've lost agriculture, unless they want to work as peasants for agribusiness.
You have, again in this book, you have a quotation from Justice Brandeis, which is a very powerful quotation, which I'm going to read and then ask you to remark upon. He says, "Our government is the potent, the omnipresent teacher. For good or ill, it teaches the whole people by its example. Crime is contagious. If the government becomes the lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for laws. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. The lawless government invites anarchy. To declare that in the administration of the criminal law, the end justifies the means. To declare that the government may commit crimes in order to secure the conviction of a private criminal would bring terrible retribution." Do you see?
Indeed I do, and this is what made me interested in Timothy McVeigh. I read this, and he said he quoted this after he'd been condemned to death. He hadn't spoken during his trial, and they said, "Do you have anything to say?" And he said, "Yes, I'd like to quote Justice Brandeis's dissent in Olmstead." And he didn't do all of that much, but he did about half of it, and I was very intrigued, because I was quite aware of how the government, what they had done at Waco and also at Ruby Ridge. He had followed all that, and he decided that he would strike a blow at them. Well, I understood why he wanted to do it. I did not approve, obviously, of what he did. I mean, there are other ways of getting back at a government that you realize that you believe to be tyrannous and the enemy of the people at large. He wrote a marvelous piece, which he got published just before he died, was killed, and it was about the deliberate militarization of the police, starting with the FBI. He said, you know, he said, "I'm a professional soldier." He got the Bronze Star for bravery in the Persian Gulf. He said, "I am taught to kill, and that's my job, and that's a soldier's job. Policemen are not military men. They are civilians, and their task is to protect the life and property of other civilians from misadventure or whatever." He said, "Once you start giving them tanks and SWAT teams and so on, you are destroying the military, and you're creating a machine that may not be controllable." And they should have kept him alive a bit longer, because he might have said who the people were who helped him. McVeigh could not have made that bomb. He didn't have the expertise. And he probably could not have driven that Ryder truck from Kansas to Oklahoma City without blowing himself up. It's a highly volatile mixture he had. Others were involved.
So what kind of country have we become, or are we becoming?
We are not what we were, but it goes without saying. That's probably the lament in every generation. But it is much more visible now. And to me, the moment that really tore it was November 2000. That when we allowed that election to be stolen by the Supreme Court. A serious country would have been marching in the streets. But we aren't serious anymore. We don't care. So, thanks to Almighty God and Rehnquist, Scalia and Thomas, Sandra Day O'Connor and Kennedy, we have been given this president whom we did not vote for.
Go back to the point about the government being the teacher, for good or for ill. What kind of lesson do you think it is teaching us?
Government today?
Yeah.
You can do anything you want if you have force.
So that's the same lesson learned by the terrorists on September 11th.
Yes.
That was a conversation between Gore Vidal and Lewis Lapham, editor of Harper's Magazine. Gore Vidal is considered one of the most remarkable and irreverent cultural and political critics of our time. His series of novels covers the entire history of the United States, beginning with the book Burr and ending with Washington, D.C. He also wrote 5 plays, more than 200 essays, and a memoir. He was recorded at a party for his most recent book, Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace, How We Got to Be So Hated. Written post-September 11, it was refused publication until the summer of 2002, and not until the book had gone to the bestseller lists in translation all across Europe. The conversation between Lewis Lapham and Gore Vidal was part of a larger event with more speakers, sponsored and recorded by the Independent Institute, based in Oakland, California. Their website is www.independent.org. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on the talk by Gore Vidal on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the full 45-minute talk by Gore Vidal by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.